My guest is Paweł Kabownik. Paweł Kabownik is Poland's deputy finance minister and was an advisor to Donald Tusk, Poland's prime minister, when Donald Tusk was president of the European Council. Welcome to the podcast, Paweł.
Thank you for having me.
Since we are recording this on Tuesday, the 3rd of June, just after your second round of your presidential elections, we have to talk about the presidential elections, of course. First of all, how surprised were you by the final result when it came through?
A bit. I mean, it was clear that it's 50-50, and already last week we got polls which indicated that Mr. Nawrocki might win. So we knew that the trend for the weekend was such that Karol Nawrocki was trending a bit, which then occurred in the polls and in the final results. So not big of a surprise, but obviously. We had expected something else.
Do you agree with this analysis now, maybe instant analysis, that the young people in Poland, they voted for not your party, obviously, but also for Mr. Nawrocki's party, but also other parties of the extreme right? The headline is that Poland is losing the young vote. The Poland center-right, liberal wing of the political spectrum is losing the young voters. Is that a fair assessment or not?
I think we've seen something that is also visible in other countries, namely that young voters are, passionate about their ideals, and also they want radical and quick changes, which is why they tend to vote anti-government. And this is also the reason why many young voters didn't go to the polls, because basically they were dissatisfied with the way the changes are happening here, and they wanted more, they wanted quicker. And these days I think people in general have say we are living in times of some I might say, I would call it, we are living in a times of social media democracy. So basically, people have apps, and on the app you can order food, you can order a doctor, and you can order, holidays. And I think, the political class is not yet has not fully internalized the fact that the expectation of the new generation and people living these age in these times is such that the change, the governmental policies, the change in the society, the decisions by the government should happen in the same more or less manner, namely that people want to have it, like almost ordering Uber Eats.
Right. Since you mentioned social media, does the government take the view that this was by and large a clean and fair election? There was no evidence of any kind of foreign interference?
There were some reports, but I don't think there was severe interference, probably of the magnitude as elsewhere.
Right. The media this morning is reporting that your Prime Minister Donald Tusk is thinking about calling a vote of confidence. Can you confirm that? And can you say what he hopes to achieve and how? What kind of result is likely to happen?
Absolutely. We are living in democracy, so the vote on Sunday is also a test for the government, which is why the Prime Minister announced that he will seek reconfirmation of his mandate in the parliament again. So, obviously, for the reason to confirm that he still has legitimacy of the MPs to run the government. I think it's a proper democratic behavior. And every decent prime minister should do that. And as we know, Donald Tusk is a decent guy, so he's doing that.
And it's obviously it's a very decent thing to do, as you say, but also a very risky thing to do, right? Elections are not due in your country for another 2 years. He didn't have to call this vote.
Of course he didn't, but as I said, he's a proper politician and a decent man, and that's what you do in such moments. And obviously, there is always a risk. I mean, we have risk in our lives every day. So I don't think it's a big deal that the Prime Minister is seeking reconfirmation. If he really wants to, grab power and continue his reforms, he needs to have a feeling that he's fully backed by the majority in the parliament. So I think it's pretty normal, and it will obviously strengthen him.
Okay, there's been a lot of instant analysis and comment to the effect that President-elect Navroki will be a serious obstacle to your government's agenda. Is there any element where this is maybe exaggerated, overstated? People outside Poland may not be fully familiar with the powers and limits of the powers of the president of your country.
I think it's a bit exaggerated. I mean, we have a president who is not very cooperative right now, and we're going to have a similar president in the future. So obviously, it's more difficult to govern. But as you said, there is a very limited role of the president in our system. Basically, he signs laws, and obviously, he can veto laws which he claims are bad for the country. So there is a role, but if the government is pursuing, as it is doing, proper reforms, I don't think there will be much of an obstacle.
Did he give any signs during the election campaign, President-elect Navroki, that he was going to challenge some key reforms of your government or not?
No, I don't think so. Actually, I saw yesterday some announcements of the president-elect about innovation and mobilizing financial assets to basically reset our economy on a more innovative path. So I think, the goals that we are having while resetting our economy from a low labor cost economy to a high innovation economy is broadly shared among all MPs. So I don't think there will be, any change in this regard. So I think, economically there will be a stability and we're going to continue good reforms. Obviously, where you may encounter some problems, legislatively speaking, is when there will be more ideological discussions. For example, about, the status of sex marriages. Certainly, the president will not sign such a law.
Right. Okay. Can you clarify something for me? President-elect Navroki's view about the war in Ukraine. He's seen as not pro-Russia, but then he doesn't seem to be terribly supportive of help to Ukraine. Can you clarify what that all means in practice?
Well, I think the policy of the president towards Ukraine will remain unchanged. Obviously, it's in our strategic interest as a country neighboring Ukraine that we give as much support for Ukraine as possible and for as long as it takes. So I don't think this will be contested. Even the whole Law and Justice Party is actually asking for more investments in military spending and strengthening our defense security. So this is something which is, I think, beyond the political divisions. Obviously, if you think about social rights for migrants from including from Ukraine, there could be a discussion around that, but nothing with regards to our support, full support towards Ukraine. Now, you also have to remember that Karol Nawrocki was supported by Donald Trump, so
Yeah.
certainly it will be more interesting.
Okay. I know you're using very diplomatic language. Am I right in saying that the president represents the country in NATO? The prime minister represents the country at the European Council. Is that correct?
Yes, so that's exactly right, which I think is a very good practice. And given the fact that in NATO you have the President of the US, I think this will be very convenient, as a matter of fact. And in the European Council, as you mentioned, the Prime Minister who's doing the European policy is representing Poland. So nothing will change here as well.
You're giving me a very strong impression, Paweł, that with goodwill on both sides, that this there could be quite a constructive, certainly pragmatic working relationship between the Prime Minister and the President. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that would be certainly the approach of the government, because that's what we have to do. I mean, we 10 million people voted for Trzaskowski, 10 million people voted for Nawrocki. We have a divided country, like you had during Brexit, like the Americans have with Trump,
Yeah.
like you see you are watching in the in Germany with AfD, in France with Marine Le Pen. So basically, we are living in societies which are very much divided, and obviously the question is, How do you approach such a situation? And I believe that we have to focus on maintaining the community of the society as such, because this political wars between two sides is something that makes us weaker, not stronger. So I'm a firm believer in building a community, talking to the other side, and reaching out.
Okay, well, let's move on the conversation a bit then, Pavel. Irrespective of Sunday's second round elections for the presidency, the role and the position of Poland in the European Union, how would you characterize it these days?
As you know, we have a presidency in the EU, and we have managed to influence policies in Brussels, which are detrimental not only to our future, but also the future of the European continent, as we believe, namely, first and foremost, strengthening defense capabilities. And here we have a major success in the form of a SAFE instrument, which is 150 billion of euros of cheap loans, which repayment is deferred by 10 years, and which are going to be repaid until 2070. So this 150 billion euros is a major investment in our, basically in our defense industry. But we are looking from a broader angle at that, and certainly would like to make sure that these investments will benefit the innovation and benefit the modernization of our economies, not only our industry. And this brings me to the core problem of competitiveness, which we also put as the most important political goal for our presidency, but also the Danes who are taking over on the 1st of July, they also will continue these works because, we have a major problem in Europe. We have a strategy how to reduce CO2 emissions. However, we do not have a strategy how to lower energy prices. So I'm asking, my friends in the Commission and actually at the ECOFIN, so at the finance ministers, our last ECOFIN council in June, we will put exactly this question to the European Commission. Guys, we need a full strategy how to lower prices in Europe, and we don't have that. So this is a big problem for us,
Did you expect these kind of challenges when you took on the presidency the 1st of January? I mean, you'll be leaving it in just under a month's time. Are they looking ahead slightly to the end of June, at the end of your presidency, will you be able to look back and see that you've been able to make some tangible progress on key dossiers for you?
Absolutely. I mean, the problem of competitiveness of European economy, both you and I remember 25 years ago when we were discussing Andrei Sapir report or Wim Kok reports, which were commissioned by presidents of the European Commission on competitiveness, with the basic analysis that we are lacking competitiveness and we are losing ground vis-à-vis the Americans. Now this picture is being complemented by the fact that there is also China in the picture, but we are still losing towards the US. So we were, championing the competitiveness as the major political priority already before Mario Draghi produced his famous report. So for us, yes, we were very much prepared, and we also have to challenge the European Commission because obviously they need incentives to be better aligned with the policies that our societies need. And for that reason, for example, in January, we had commissioned the IMF report exactly on the energy prices and on the consolidation of the energy market in Europe, because this is lacking. And we put it forward to finance ministers, we invited the European Commission. We have solutions, and now we have to demand, or maybe I should say, and now we have to request from the European Commission a course of action which will be credible and which will be very clear, because the fact that not only consumers, not only households, but first and foremost companies, small, big, all enterprises are facing this challenge of high energy prices, which was not so evident a few years back. And this is a major challenge, not only because it hampers what they are doing now, but even more importantly, it will hamper our future growth, because the future growth will come from sectors that are high energy intensive, like, for example, data centers. So if you are thinking about future development of European economy, if you are thinking about building innovative economy, you need to have a proper strategy on how to lower energy costs in Europe for good.
You've more than once mentioned that it's up to the European Commission to produce these strategies, Pavel. Isn't there another argument that it's up to some of the member states to be more enthusiastic about some of the key recommendations of the Draghi report, right? It's some member states dragging their feet. Is that fair?
You know, we had a discussion on Draghi report among finance ministers, and frankly speaking, all ministers shared the analysis.
Okay.
So now the question is, what is the practical meaning of that, and what is the practical political agenda in Brussels? And for that, we have the European Commission, who is responsible, which is why I'm mentioning the Commission, because, you know, of course, it's not easy. And as you said, maybe some member states are dragging their feet. But first and foremost, we need to have a clear and visible plan from the European Commission, which is credible. And frankly speaking, we have bits and pieces, but we don't have a full plan yet. And obviously, I'm not saying that to criticize the Commission, because I know how difficult governance is and governing is. But again, you know, in such divided societies with so many external threats, we have to make up our mind. I mean, we have to, you know, get a grip and basically start acting properly, because otherwise, even the whole European project may be endangered. I mean, this is a very serious risk. So I'm very worried that there is not a serious enough analysis and political agenda as yet present in the legislative action by the Commission. However, obviously, you know, they're doing their job and presenting, for example, a whole package of deregulatory agenda, which is championed by Commissioner Valdis Dombrovskis. So here we have a very, very clear plan how to deregulate the economy. And this, I would like to praise Vice President of the Commission, Valdis Dombrovskis, for that, because he's meticulously looking through all the regulation that can be scrapped. But we also have, as I said, energy issue, and for that there are different commissioners responsible. And I don't see a strategy for lowering energy prices. I'm sorry, I'm very disappointed.
Right. So, well, since you know what the issue is and the absence of this strategy from the Commission, what role could somebody like you're inside the council, you're taking part in ECOFIN councils, as you said, people like yourself have a certain influence to bear.
Absolutely. That's why, as I said, in January, for our first discussion among finance ministers, we had procured IMF report on energy prices and how to lower them in Europe. So this was an external analysis, not from the Commission, so that to challenge the Commission. Now, after many discussions among ministers of energy and climate, where we were trying to push this agenda through, at our last ECOFIN meeting in June, we'll put exactly this question to the Commission: what is the strategy for lowering energy prices? And we will invite all ministers of finance to have this discussion together with the Commission, because we need a proper strategy in order to reboot our economy and in order to grow. Because if Europe doesn't grow, it will be flooded by populism.
Right. So a final question then. You mentioned these older reports where you and I first met, the Koch report and those kind of reports more than 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You seem to have serious worries that the Draghi report is kind of shorthand phrase for the broader competitiveness agenda is going to be slowly ignored like these other reports in the past. And if you do think that, or if you do have a potential concern about that, what can be done apart from the European Commission coming out with a strategy to make sure that does not happen?
Well, you haven't changed that much over those 20 years, so we are
Right.
not that old yet. But seriously speaking, we have to do what we are doing here. I mean, we have to honestly say what's the reality. It's probably not very orthodox to criticize the commission, to say that I'm disappointed as a indeed deputy finance minister who is chairing presidency. This is something which normally you shouldn't do, right? Because it's rather undiplomatic. But I think that the threat from outside, the threat from populism is such that the time for rounded words is over, and we have to be frank in our assessment, because otherwise, in a couple of years, we may not wake up in Poland where half of the political spectrum is voting for populists. We may end up in Europe where the German chancellor is AfD politician, or we may end up in France with a president who wants to quit the EU. So I'm sorry, I mean, we are at the critical moment in our history, and we have to recognize that. And that's why I'm saying that everybody has to take their own responsibility, the responsibility for delivering strategy on how to lower energy prices in Europe lies on the Commission. And the legacy of the past years is such that we have lots of regulation in the Green Deal, which obviously was done with good intention. But this legislation is unfit for purpose because it's badly calibrated. It's basically fueling populism, and it's not delivering on energy costs. So I'm sorry, you have to sit at the table and start from maybe from scratch or maybe not. But certainly, you have to start a very serious consideration of what to do next. No, because I have also many friends in the Commission, and I know that they also think the same way. So it's not a matter of criticism, it's a matter of focus. So we have to focus on this aspect, but as simple as that. Now, Draghi is around several hundred pages. So that's why I'm just mentioning this energy crisis, because I firmly believe that we lack focus. So, for example, we focus on defense financing and we have delivery. Now we have to focus on energy prices and we will be able to prove to citizens, to our electorates, to people that Europe delivers, that Europe makes sense because it can sort out a major problem. So I think, this is a very serious issue.
Message received. Well, we have to leave it there. Pavel Karbovnik, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.